Greetings in Jesus' precious name this morning. I have a finish up first. The last time I preached, we were talking about finding God's will in really practical ways. And there were two things that were important that I didn't share. In the question of what shall I do for work, this came from a brother here. He said it's okay to try different things, and I like that advice. There are Christian Aid Ministries projects, and you can find out if you like sanding drywall or not. You might go work for Uncle Bob on the farm for the summer and see what you think of farming or milking cows. You could try student teaching. You could volunteer at a business or ministry. You could be secretary of a Bible school and see if you'd like that kind of work. There are just many ways to try out jobs. You might help a mother and see how you feel about taking care of children. There's just many. I like that advice a lot. Try different things if you're feeling unsure. And you can be a blessing in the process. Another one that came from a brother here. One of the questions was, who shall I marry? He said that young people should consider, will this person make a good parent? I realize that's taking a lot of assumptions because you have to make the assumption, and this feels like a stretch to a young person, but if we would date, if we would get engaged, if we would marry, if we would be blessed for children, would this person make a good parent? But you know, it usually ends there. It often does. And so it's not bad to think about that. Another way to ask that question is, would we agree on child training methods? I was blessed by that. It felt like solid advice for young people. Today, let's consider Psalm 1. I'm going to give a little credit here to Brother Kevin. At conference on Thursday morning, he used this passage. I was feeling uncertain about today's message, and when he used it, it was clear to me that the message should be about this. I have notes in my Bible from Brother Louis Strite presenting a topic, I think, on this quite a few years ago. I'm also keenly aware that for Andrew's family, Andrew and Loretta, between now and next Sunday, there's a lot of change. I don't know if this will be the last sermon you hear in English for a while or not, but so next Sunday will look different. There will be new culture and new house and new language and new church, and I don't know if you'll need an anchor through this transition or not, but if you do, I offer Psalm 1 for that. It's the first, and when Brother Keith was preaching at conference, he used Jesus' first statement in the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the poor in spirit. So that's chapter 1, part A, statement 1. And as David opens the book of Psalms, we are the same place. Chapter 1, part A, part 1, statement 1. And interestingly enough, they both start out with the same word, blessed. But I think this morning this is a very familiar psalm to us. Most of us have King James Bibles, or we have it memorized that way. I'd like to stand and say this together, or read it together. So let's stand. Verse 1. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous.
For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish.
You may be seated. Thank you. With each of these verses, I have a personal question for us to consider. In verse 1, the question is, who influences me? You notice the word blessed there, and some translations would use the word happy. Young says, oh, the happiness of that one who. I feel like happy is too weak. Blessed is much better. But let's think about blessed. Blessed is to have the favor of Almighty God. And what all that encapsulates, I'm not understanding yet. But when God blesses a person, he pours out all of his riches into them and on them bountifully and freely. And there are just many blessings that go with blessed, but peace and direction and comfort. And the word and brotherhood and many other things. But to be blessed is to be amazingly blessed. And interestingly enough, this person says that you are blessed if you don't do three things. And Proverbs, Solomon says similar when he says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path. Talking of evil people. And in Ecclesiastes, he warns about the path to destruction, to the wicked lady's house. And so this, you notice there's a progression here. The man, the person that does not walk, does not stand, does not sit. You also notice perhaps a progression between counsel and path and seat. And maybe a progression between ungodly, sinners, and scornful. And we won't totally unpack that, but just think about the difference between walking with someone. I don't think this means deeply walking, but casually walking. It's dangerous to walk in the counsel of the ungodly. It's even more dangerous to stand with them. They stop, you stop. And I've noticed that when you're walking on a path and you're talking, that works until you get into a deep conversation, and invariably you both stop and you stand there and you discuss. And sitting down is most dangerous. To sit implies fellowship. To sit in a seat, not your seat, but their seat, of scorn, mockery, ridicule of things godly, is most dangerous. Avoid, the man is blessed, the person who is blessed who avoids these things. We'll pick up a more positive about different things as we go down through here, but there is caution, great caution advised about who influences me. I'm using the word influences because recently I came across this thing of influencers. I didn't know there was such a thing, but there are online influencers. They are people who are paid to promote things. It's different than advertising. It's people who, dare I say, sell themselves somewhat to be an influencer. So good influencers are great, but the problem is many influencers are not so great. So those that we walk with, stand with, and sit with make a huge difference on where we end up. And this passage goes on to describe that. I mentioned Proverbs 1. Here's one from Proverbs 4, 14 and 15. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. And I think the reason that he starts out with walking, standing, and sitting is because sin and temptations are progressive. And he is saying that if you are not careful about walking, you will end up standing and sitting. And so choose your friends and associates carefully. and be blessed that you have a church which influences you for good, and turn it around and make yourself a good influence through others. Okay, verse 2. What do I delight in? David said his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. I think Brother Kevin mentioned this, or maybe it was Brother Ivan. Might have been Brother Ivan. About this thing of meditating. So it's one thing to read the word and meditate thereon. Although your mind might be pulled away in many directions, are you able to read and meditate? And then what about when you're not reading? Do you have any meditation left? Any way to continue through the day of remembering and meditating on what you have read that day, that morning, that evening? David's testimony was that he loved the law of the Lord. And I'm blessed by that. He had the law, just the law. And so you take the first five books, and is your delight in that? His delight was in the law of his God. And he said he meditates thereon day and night. I was interested that when Moses was talking to Joshua in Joshua 1 verse 8, he said, similar, this word of the law, this book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, and you shall observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. And so I'm challenging all of us on our delight. We take delight in many things, but is the word of God our delight? One gentleman at conference mentioned that he looks forward to Minister's Week, like some people look forward to the first day of deer season. And I was blessed by that. I mean, sometimes we go to different things, more of a sense of we should, or we know we will be blessed. And he was expressing what he delights in, and I was challenged and blessed by that. So what do you delight in? Is it God's Word? And if not, how can you get there? To where his word is delight. David also said in Psalm 119, where he's talking about the word of God for the entire passage, and in verse 1, he says, again, blessed are the undefiled in the way who walk in the law of the Lord. And in verse 97, he says, oh, how I love your law! Exclamation point. Brother Ivan mentioned, it is my meditation all the day. Well, you wonder why David was such a man of God. I think it had everything to do with what he meditated on. It is easy to meditate on many things. Problems at work, problems at home, desires, dreams, goals, next week, tomorrow, yesterday, last year. And yet, through all of that, and above and below all that, is our delight in the law of the Lord. If it is, we'll find great comfort there and great direction for all of the situations we face. Verse 3, he moves to this idea of a tree. I'm spending a little more time here thinking about our lives and how we are like trees, can be like trees. David says, he shall be like a tree. I want you to make a strong connection between 2 and 3 in that 3 is a tree planted by the rivers of water, bringing forth his fruit. His leaf shall not wither, and whatsoever he does shall prosper. A tree planted by the rivers of water has roots. And it is not exactly mentioned here, but it is implied that the roots of the tree are in the water or near the water, and that is what is feeding it. And I want you to connect that with his meditation in verse 2. And I think that was what the intention was there, that there was a link, that this delight in the law of the Lord is the root reaching down to the water of the Word, and it creates growth and growth possibilities. And so in verse 3, the question is, am I rooted and fruitful? Jeremiah used similar language when he said, "Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose hope is in the Lord, for he shall be like a tree planted by the waters, which spreads out its roots by the river." So I think it was implied there. In fact, David and Jeremiah were on a very similar thought. And continuing, Jeremiah, "and will not fear when heat comes, but its leaf will be green and will not be anxious in the year of drought, nor will cease from yielding fruit." Why? Because the roots are down in the water and it's getting water. "He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water." So our meditation and where our roots are, I think, are the same thing. In other words, what we're taking in, what we're bringing into our lives, what we're rooted in, is that which we delight in, that which we meditate on. And that is why that it is so important that what we feed on, it comes out. We might just go a little divergent path for a minute and think about what Jesus said about the vine and the branches. I realize that's a slightly different concept. But if you think about John 15, verse 4, Jesus says, "Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the true vine and you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit, for without me you can do nothing." You get the same picture there, that what we are attached to, what we are getting nourishment from, is very important to our growth. I'd like to say a little bit more about trees. You know that I like trees and enjoy trees. I've said that before. I think the tree symbol or the tree parallel to our lives goes further than I had realized. But think about the fact that trees need germination, water, light. Trees, yeah. So the word, the water of the word, the light from God, God's light. They need nourishment, nutrients. Trees have lifespans. And in those lifespans, they have seasons of spring, summer, fall, winter. And we experience those same seasons. In a lot of ways, we don't live as long as trees, and yet we live much longer than some plants. Think about the strength of a tree, its root system, its maturity. You know, you can just imagine a seedling like a child needing some tender care. It's dependent. A sapling, we say a stripling teenager, you know, they have a lot of growth, and yet they are somewhat flexible. They can be quite bent by things that push upon them. Think about the maturity of a tree that's this big around. You can push against it, but it doesn't budge much. Think about a mature Christian. Think about the weathered parts of trees, how that storms can change them. It is so fascinating to go to a high mountain, any high mountain, and notice that the branches of the trees are often more to the south and east because of those west winds and west storms and this light and the heat that come from the south, and you can just see it there. So things around us affect us. But I'm just thinking about a godly, mature person and how much they are like a tree, rooted and fruitful. You'll notice that he mentions here, bringeth forth his fruit in his season. It's often the season of fruitfulness for a person is all of their lives, but maybe toward the middle and the end more. And there's also this thing about leaves. Leaves shall not wither. Leaves bring shade. They show life. They are beautiful, especially in the spring when they're fresh and new, and in the summer when they're rich green, and in the fall when they're multicolored. and even in the winter when they're not there, and you have the branches of the tree that are left. There's another thing about a tree that I was not really thinking of, but is so true. I'll start with this little story. At Christian Light in the lunchroom, we have walnut trim. And we would not have bought walnut trim, I'm almost positive, except that there were walnut trees in the way of a building project. And so I'm not sure how that all worked out. Kevin Shank took some and some was left. And so there was free wood. And so somebody cut it into boards and kiln dried it and milled it and finished it. And so the lunchroom has this walnut trim, which kind of strikes me because that's more lavish than we would usually use. Well, that was nice and everything. And it just was kind of there in my mind as, oh yeah, that trim came from the trees when we built the new addition. But I didn't realize the whole story until just maybe 2 weeks ago, when I was talking to Crystal about this and that and the other thing, and we get to spend more time together working through different bookkeeping issues. Somehow this whole thing of walnut trees came up, and she said, oh yeah, Sanford, the founder of Christian Light in a lot of ways, her dad, had planted those trees. He had intentionally went out there and planted trees because his thought, she said, was that when he retires, he could sell the lumber, or he could use the lumber to make cabinets or to do projects with. And so it's more meaningful to me now when I see that trim in the lunchroom to think that that probably was a tree that Brother Sanford planted. I want you to think about that, though, because here is a verse in the Bible. Hebrews 11:4, and by faith Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and through it he being dead still speaks. And so I'm saying that our lives as trees can have this legacy that even after we're dead and gone, and those trees are dead and gone, but they're not gone, they're still there, and they're still an influence. And wood comes from dead trees. So just to consider the fact that after we are gone, our legacy of faith, which is what Hebrews 11:4 is talking about, can stand somewhat like wood does to the testament of a live tree that once was and is no more, of God's faithfulness. And I am just challenged by that. And I will admit that maybe this is tied a tiny bit to having turned 50. and realizing that, it's a gradual realization for all of us that we are mortal and that we will not be here forever. And leafiness and fruitfulness are for a season. And even after that, there can be a legacy of faith left, a blessing to the next generation. If you think about old wood, there are many old wood, and much in the Bible was built from wood, but you know the ark was made of wood, and it lasted a long time, both arks, the big one and the little one. And there were many other things that were wood that lasted as a physical reminder of something that happened long ago. And it's interesting that even today there's kind of resurgence of barn wood and old wood, and it's even more valuable than new wood because I'm not sure why, because it's unique and it's been around a long time. I'll just back up just a little bit about this thing about trees growing by rivers. This is a little different thought, but Ezekiel 12 is an interesting passage to study, and he's talking about trees by rivers too, and salt water and fresh water and a specific piece of land, and I can't understand all of that. I won't even pretend that I do, because there's just things there I don't get. But he writes in verse 12, along the bank of the river, on this side and on that, will grow all kinds of trees used for food. Their leaves will not wither, their fruit will not fail. They will bear fruit every month because their water flows from the sanctuary. Their fruit will be for food and their leaves for medicine. So you can just read that and ponder that. But you'll think, too, about Revelation 22. And there's another river and another tree. And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the middle of its street and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations, and so on. So are they the same tree or trees? I'm not sure. The setting is quite different. One, Ezekiel seems to be talking about something different, but the passages are so parallel. But there's water, and there's trees, and there's fruit. And that reminds me of Psalm 1, verse 3. They're planted by water, and they're bringing forth fruit, and they have leaves, and the leaf will not wither. We're used to leaves being temporary, but these leaves are godly, more lasting than we're used to. And the last phrase of that verse, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. Well, what do you make of that? We can't claim that everything we put our hand to works. Not every industry is prosperous by any stretch. I challenge you to take a little longer range look than that. As Christians, if we are in the Word, we're solid, fruitful, life-giving trees. Take the long look and say that what we do, what we deposit in God's bank, think about the Sermon on the Mount. It's not so much whatever we do here on earth will prosper, like we think prosperous, successful, but is not every Christian successful? Is their life not, if it's in service to God, a testament of God's grace? And so, I don't know what all David had in mind there. It is true that in the Old Testament, God definitely poured out more material blessings on the faithful. You come to the New Testament and you have, blessed are the poor in spirit, the persecuted, the hungry. Blessed are ye when men revile you, and so on. So it's a bit different than it was then. And yet it still stands that God's ultimate blessings are for those who serve him. There's more that could be said, but we'll move on. Okay. Verse 4 and 5 I have put together. The question, the personal question is, will I stand? Because in verse 4, he says, the ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. Therefore, tying those two together, the ungodly shall not stand, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. And so he's making a contrast between this tree, I'm going to say this righteous tree, this solid tree, this much longer lived tree than this ungodly chaff. And we have that numerous times in the Bible. The ungodly are like smoke. They are like a morning cloud. They are like early dew. That's in Hosea. Jesus said in Luke 3, his winnowing fan in his hand, he will thoroughly clean out his threshing floor, gather the wheat, and burn the chaff. And another similar picture is in Matthew 13:30, let them both grow together, talking about the wheat and the tares. At the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, first gather the tares and bind them in bundles and burn them, then gather the wheat into my barn. And so he's contrasting the solidity of the tree to this chaff, this ungodly chaff. And that ties back to verse 1, because in verse 5 he says, shall not stand. And verse 1 you have the standing idea there. So the ungodly will not stand in the judgment. He's talking about, I think, the final judgment mentioned in Revelation 20. And he's saying that the sinners, they're just, it's an empty, it's a shifting, it's almost worse than nothing, because if you have nothing, well, then it's not a problem. But if you have chaff, it is a problem. And so it needs to be gotten rid of. It needs to be blown, cleansed, taken out. And the question, the personal question is, will I stand, has everything to do with, am I a tree or chaff? Am I solid for the Lord? Am I shifty? Worse yet, not committed at all. The ungodly are just, well, there's so much they're missing out on. And how to help them understand that, this passage doesn't exactly say. But in the end, the righteous will shine, the chaff will not stand. Will not stand, verse 5. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. And when we think congregation, I think we often think church. But I think this is just simply the group of the righteous will be purged of the sinners. God will make that call. I'll mention here Matthew 16:27. The Son of Man will come in His glory of His Father with His angels, and He will reward each according to his works. So our works will determine whether we have been tree-like or chaff-like. I noticed also in Revelation where it's speaking about the judgment, it's according to works. And in Revelation 20, they were judged, each one according to his work. So our work will declare whether we are trees or chaff. God help us to be strong trees. Lastly, let's look at verse 6. For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. Question here is, does the Lord know me now? It stands in some contrast to verse 4 and 5, talking about future things and the judgment. But the question for 6 is, the Lord knoweth, present, the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. If you're taking notes, there's 3 verses that say very similar things. Paul said to Timothy, "Nevertheless, the solid foundation of God stands, having the seal, the Lord knows those who are His. And let everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity." I take great comfort in knowing that the Lord knows our paths and our steps. I was especially thinking about Andrew's with this verse. Yeah, the Lord knows. He knows the future. He knows the way of the righteous. He also knows, at the end of the verse, the way of the ungodly. And so God knows. And in John 10:14, Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and am known by my own. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me." And so this whole thing of the Lord knowing the way of the righteous is a precious promise, I think. There might be times when we wonder, is God aware? Is God present? We might even ask, does God care? And yet we have many verses to say that God does know. He knows. It's a very solid, foundational statement that the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous. Not only does He know, but He is with us. You can pick that up in Psalm 23, where the shepherd is with us in different situations. We had that message recently. Okay, I'm backing up now a little bit and thinking about paths and trees. Just in summary, in closing, trees need water and light. They can be strong and beautiful. They have seasons. They are useful. And they live on after their death. They can live on after their death. God is looking for the little song, strong young trees, strong mature trees. And I'm thinking about paths. This passage is about paths. You notice that in verse 1, there's a path. And in verse 6, the Lord knoweth the way, or the path, of the righteous and the path of the ungodly. I was thinking about paths. We know there's a broad path, a narrow path. You should spend a bit of time just thinking about Pilgrim's Progress and that literal path that he embarked on and what all he faced. Paths can have forks, T's, turns, unexpected turns even. Some paths lead upward to the city of light. Some lead down. That's in verse 1. That's also speaking of the ungodly, just a passing thing. And God knows our path. I take great comfort in that, knowing that as we face an unknown future, the Lord knoweth the path of the righteous. May you find God's grace, all you need, for the coming weeks.